And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Well, it's about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on a Sunday night. This is the WGN Radio Theater. See, I did that really deep. The WGN Radio Theater.
It sounded like, just like Bill Curtis when you did that.
Yeah. Same. Oh, I know. I get that all the time.
Yeah, you and Bill.
Program 152 in the series. This is February 5th, at least for the next hour of 2017. What's up, Lisa Wolf?
Hi, Carl. How are you?
Man, your dimples.
It's been a few hours since I saw you last.
Deeper and deeper and deeper, those dimples
of yours.
Is
that right?
Yeah.
They're going to connect soon.
We need some spackle for those.
All right.
We'll ask Mike. Mike, could you pick up some spackle next time you're at Home Depot?
Sure, why not?
So we can take care of that problem.
Yeah, why not?
For Lisa. And then in the... hello, Mike. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well.
Our executive producer. And then in the booth is the one and only Elif Garris. She is from Turkey, but she's no turkey when it comes to producing this show. What's up, Elif? How are you?
Hey. I'm good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Yeah, not bad. Are you ready for some classic radio?
I sure am.
I also want to say hi to my really good friend, Brendan Krantz. He's here, and he used to be an intern. See, here's what happens. If you're an intern on this show, you become very wealthy and famous.
And wise.
And wise.
So I should have been an intern first instead of just start working for you.
Right. Just don't start working for me. No, that's bad. Lisa will tell you.
Oh, boy.
That's bad. But Brendan used to be our intern.
Yeah.
And he now is a big wig.
Oh.
He's working at a really big company here in Chicago. Tell us about that company real quick. We got about a minute.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Carl. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
I still brought in the donuts, so I guess I'm completing my intern role, you know, in a way.
We got some donuts over here.
I work here at Starcom, in the Publicis Media over on... in the Leo Burnett building, and we work basically with Fortune 500 companies doing marketing and advertising for them. And one of our biggest accounts we just got recently, Chick-fil-A.
Yeah,
well,
nice.
Brendan, we must have taught you really well.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take full credit for that information and the knowledge that you have, which is now powerful.
We're very proud.
Best.
Very proud of you.
What's
the website for the company?
Yeah, you can go to StarcomUSA.com.
StarcomUSA.com. Well, good to see you, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right,
me.
You're going to stick around for some classic radio?
I'm excited.
All right. We have Dangerous Assignment coming your way with Brian Donlevy, The Bickersons, and also Murder at Midnight, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars as Mayor McCaskill in the upcoming 3D computer animated film, The Lego Batman Movie. And if you are the winner, you will get a Lumel Nottis gift certificate for $25.
312-981-7200. Here's a hint. Here she is singing a song called We Belong Together.
I didn't mean it when I said I didn't love you so. I should have held on tight. I never should have let you go. I didn't know nothing. I was stupid. I was foolish. I was lying to myself.
312-981-7200. Who is that singer actress? We'll find our winner after these words.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that clip one more time.
I didn't mean it when I said I didn't love you so. I should have held on tight. I never should have let you go. I didn't know nothing. I was stupid. I was foolish. I was lying to myself.
That lady can sing.
Oh, can she ever. Laurel from Elmwood Park, we have you on the line. How are you?
Great. Hi, Lisa. Hi, Carol.
Hey,
hi,
Laurel.
Elif.
How are you?
Hi, Elif. There you go. We're hoping you recognize that actress and singer.
Yeah, that's Mariah Carey.
You are right. Mariah Carey is the right answer.
I date her.
Laurel or Mariah?
Both.
Oh, good. Well, Laurel? Can't answer for Laurel. I'm sure Mariah would date you. Now, Laurel, I'm not so sure. But Laurel,
I'm spoken for anyway, though. Uh-huh. No more dating. I'm
you're
done.
You're going to go celibate now?
I'm spoken.
Gotcha.
Spoken for.
Gotcha. Laurel, you're the winner here. You've got a Lumel 90s gift certificate for $25, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza and my favorite. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at lumelnotties.com. Thanks so much for calling, and we hope you stay with us during the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Love the show.
Thanks, Laurel.
Thanks, Laurel. All right, it's time for Dangerous Assignment. It was a spy drama. Brian Donlevy starred as U.S. secret agent Steve Mitchell, and he was sent to exotic foreign locales to troubleshoot for the USA. And he came to NBC in 1949, ran to 1953. Herb Butterfield played the commissioner who briefed Mitchell on his dangerous assignments. It transcribed to syndicated television in the early 1950s. 39 episodes were produced, and it was a great radio and great television show. Good spy intrigue program. Brian Donlevy stars now from December 30th, 1950. This is called When a Friend is Not a Friend. Here's part one of Dangerous Assignment.
Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though, trouble. But when I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize this assignment's going to have me asking, when is a friend not a friend? Answer, when he's tickling your ribs with a gun.
Well, here he is, Commissioner.
Thanks, Ruth. Morning, Steve.
Commissioner?
I suppose I fooled you right out of a big deal as usual.
No, this time it was strictly business. I was getting caught up on my paperwork.
What?
Honest, I was bringing my files up to date.
Yeah? How many telephone numbers make up a file?
That's what I thought.
I have your papers at my desk when you're ready, Steve.
Thanks, Ruth. Well, what's the deal, Commissioner?
Take a look at this map of Eastern Europe, Steve. This country right here.
What about it?
Politically, it's being torn apart. There are two major parties at odds with each other and a well-organized minority who'd like to keep them at odds.
Pretty familiar pattern.
Yes, it is. But right now, it's vital to Western Europe and to us that this particular country be united into a democratic form of government. And there's only one man who can unite that country.
Don't tell me it's me.
No. Dr. Corvell.
Dr. Corvell? But he's no politician.
That's the point, Steve. Dr. Corvell has no political affiliations. He's that country's leading citizen, a scholar, a scientist, a man of stature.
Yeah, he could be just the man for the job.
As you know, he's been living in this country since the war, but now he feels it's time to return to his own country. There's to be a vital meeting of the legislature over there in 3 days, a meeting that could determine which way the country goes. If Covell could pop up at that meeting, it might turn the trick.
So what do you want me to do, escort the good doctor over there?
He's already left.
What?
Yeah, the day before yesterday.
Well, then I don't get it. Why call me on the deal? What more is to be done?
I'm calling you that, Steve. Dr. Corvell realized that the organized minority would try at all costs to prevent him from reaching his destination. So he's traveling incognito. Plans to reach and enter his country secretly.
But I still don't see...
His plan was to go directly to the house of a friend in the capital of his country. This morning, we found out that this so-called friend is actually a member of the minority.
What?
Yes, it's a death trap for Dr. Corvell. Now, Steve, you've got to intercept Corvell before he reaches that man's house.
Brother, have you any idea where Corvell is now?
We know only that he was planning to contact a person named Dravik in the town of Rizma, across the border from his country. Now, Steve, get over to Rizma. Try to find Dravik. Above all, get to Corvell before the opposition does. And remember, from now on, every minute counts double. Well, that's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
Sure, I've got my assignment. Just a simple matter of getting to Dr. Corvell before the opposition does, and incidentally, trying to keep the opposition from getting to me. A real cinch. Well, it's Tuesday when I get to Rizma. I've got to find Dravik in a hurry, but I haven't any idea where he is. There's only one hotel in town, so I check in, and then I ask the desk clerk about Dravik. He says he's never even heard the name, but he does remember a distinguished-looking man with white hair staying at the hotel overnight a couple of days ago. Probably Dr. Corvell. I turn away from the desk and start across the lobby, and then I spot a very familiar face. It's a foreign agent named Marsak. I've tangled with him plenty in the past, and I've no desire to renew the acquaintance now, so I start to duck into the bar, but he sidles in front of me.
Well, my old and dear friend, Mr. Mitchell.
Hello, Marsak.
My, such a cold greeting to give to a man who possesses such admiration for you. After all the times we have been together in the past, Mitchell, even though on opposite sides of the fence, I should think that you might be a little more cordial.
Look, you mind getting out of my way?
The man is in a hurry. Such a pity, such a pity. I thought perhaps we might find a quiet corner and talk over old times together.
I said get out of my way.
But what destination could possibly be so important that you could not spare a few minutes for an old, let us say, colleague?
I'm going into the bar, if that's okay with you, Marsak.
Splendid. Thank you for your invitation. I accept with pleasure. Some drinks, much talk, a perfect way to spend an evening.
Look, for the last time, I didn't invite you. I'm drinking alone, and if you don't...
Drinking alone? What a barbarous custom. But then I suppose it is to a certain extent fitting that a man should have a farewell drink in solitude.
Farewell drink?
Yes. I understand you do not like this town of Rizma. I cannot say that I blame you.
Oh?
I understand further that there is a train leaving here in half an hour and that you plan to be on it. So I decided to help you by reserving a compartment for you.
Now, that's real sweet of you, Marsak. But what if I decide I like it here?
In that case, I understand it is quite possible you may remain here permanently.
You're quite an understanding guy, aren't you?
Yes. And I believe you are also. Goodbye, Mr. Mitchell. Come again when you cannot stay so long. And please extend my very best regards to your commissioner.
Yeah.
I beg your pardon, sir.
What?
I overheard you ask the desk clerk a few minutes ago about a distinguished-looking man with white hair.
What about it?
I believe you are referring to Dr. Corvell.
Was I? Who are you?
Bisco, a friend of the doctor's. And I am worried about him.
What do you mean?
His return is the one thing which can unite our country. But I feel he is in great danger. You see, he plans to go to the house of a friend of his in our capital. I now have reason to believe that friend intends to betray the doctor.
I see. Yeah, let's go here right.
That is why I crossed the border to Rizma here, to try to intercept the doctor and warn him, but I was too late. He has already left.
Yeah. You ever hear of a guy named Dravik?
Dravik, no. Mitchell, the situation is very serious. We must find Dr. Corvell.
First, I've got to find Dravik. I can't get very far doing that with that character Marsak on my tail.
Yes, I saw Marsak talking to you. I know all about Marsak. He is a dangerous man.
He just invited me to leave town. If there were only some way I could shake him, might give me time enough to locate this Dravik.
Wait. I think I have an idea.
What is it, Bisco?
See, Marsak is across the lobby watching us. He undoubtedly knows you have orders to find Corvell. And also, undoubtedly, Marsak has orders to stop you.
So?
So if we were to conclude our conversation and I were to slip furtively out the side door and get into my car, Marsak might assume I had information concerning Dr. Corvell.
Yeah, he'd probably follow you, all right.
I will make sure he follows me a long way. Long enough to take him off your trail for an hour or two.
Okay, Bisco, it's worth a try. Go ahead. Bisco slips out the side door and Marsak starts after him. So far, so good, but I still don't have any leads on Dravik. I head for the bar to figure it out and where to start, and pretty soon a girl eases over to my table.
Hello.
Hi.
I am sorry. Are you lonely?
No, I'm Steve, but sit down anyway.
Oh, thank you.
You want me to buy you a drink, I suppose?
A cigarette will do for the moment.
Well, that's a switch. Here.
Thank you.
Waiter, did I put...
Look, Sari, this is all very pleasant, but as far as making an evening of it, I've unfortunately got something else on my mind right now.
I know.
Huh?
You are looking for Dravik.
What? Yeah, I am. Do you know him?
Oh, yes, I'm quite a good friend of Dravik's.
Where is he?
First, let me ask you, why do you wish to see Dravik?
Well, that's something I'll talk to Dravik about.
I see. Well, Dravik is not interested so much in people's motives. Dravik is most of all interested in knowing whether there is money in it.
Okay, you can tell him there's dough in it for him.
How much?
Plenty.
Very well.
You'll take me to him?
No, that is not possible.
What? You mean we've just been making idle conversation?
I would not call it that.
Why can't you take me to him?
Because Dravik is not a him.
Not a... You're Dravik?
Yes. Sorry, Dravik.
Well, what do you know? So I break my back trying to find you, and it ends up with you finding me.
Yes, and I would say it is quite divine.
Oh?
But I still would like to know why you wish to find me.
Well, first, let me ask you, how do you fit in this deal with Dr. Corvell?
Deal? Dr. Corvell? I'm not sure what you mean. Oh, unless it has something to do with my rat line?
Your what?
No, that is what they call it, the rat line. You see, Stephen, there are many people in countries behind this, what you call iron curtain, who wish to be elsewhere. So, for a considerable price, I smuggle them out.
I see. Does your rat line ever run in reverse, Sari?
You too.
What do you mean, me too?
Most people are breaking their backs trying to escape to the West these days. And now twice in 2 days I find men who wish to go east. I think everybody's suddenly crazy.
Wait a minute. This other man who wanted to go east, was he a tall fellow, distinguished looking, with white hair?
Oh, that is the man.
Dr. Corvell, all right.
He told me he wanted to go to the capital city of the country to the east of here, and he was willing to pay a great amount of money. So I, as you say, reversed my rat line. I took him across the border just before dawn.
Look, Sari, I've got to catch up to him. He's going to collect a bullet if I don't.
I see. Well, there is always the chance you will collect a bullet along the way. But for you...
And for money.
The two most convincing arguments I can think of. Very well, we will try to catch up with this Dr. Corvell. Here's an address. You meet me on the corner in front of this place in 2 hours. We will start then.
I head back to my hotel then. As I open the door to my room, I see I've got company. There's a local cop on one side of my room, and on the other is a woman I've never seen before. But right now, she's acting like we were long-lost enemies.
There he is, officer.
Huh?
That is the one. I insist you arrest him at once.
Hey, what is this?
This woman claims you stole her jewels.
Stole her jewels? Now,
I am positive of it, officer. This man is Hugo Brissac, the notorious gem thief.
Hugo Schmugo, I'm Steve Mitchell from the United States, officer, and if you'd care to look at my credentials...
You see, officer, as I told you, this thief frequently poses as an American agent.
I'm afraid you'll have to come with me.
But this woman's mistaken, I...
Unfortunately, I found her jewels in your suitcase.
What?
So you must come with me.
Wait, I get it now. Anything to delay me, huh? Look, lady, I don't know who you are, but I sure know whom you're working for.
Arrest this man!
You will come quietly.
Sure, officer, real quiet. Sorry, Buster, but I haven't got any time to waste right now.
Dave!
Oh, drop dead. I run downstairs and duck out the side door. The opposition's gag had almost worked. By the time I could have talked my way out of the frame, it had been too late to catch up with Dr. Corvell, of course. Well, now there'll be the little matter of the cops on my tail. Great. I roost behind a few assorted ash cans in an alley for a couple of hours, and then I go to the address Sari gave me. She's waiting for me in the shadows.
What? The notorious jewel thief.
Yeah. I see the news travels fast, Sari.
I believe the police are quite anxious to find me.
I don't doubt it.
So, I understand now why you wish to escape from this country.
Look, I'm trying to find Corvell. That jewel business was a frame.
Oh, too bad.
What's too bad?
You would make such a nice jewel thief. It gives you color.
Oh, color yet.
I like you, Stephen.
I think you're peachy, too. Now let's get going, huh?
Oh, very well. Come on. Here is my car. We will drive as far as the border.
Okay. What happens then?
Well, when I get you across the border, one of my men will take you the rest of the way.
Hey.
Hmm? What's the matter?
A guy running across the street at us. Get going. It's Marzak.
Oh? Who is Marzak?
The guy who rigged the jewel frame on me. Hey, he's trying for the running board.
You will not get away, Mitchell.
Oh, yes, Marzak.
No.
Oh, very neat, Stephen.
Listen. Sirens. Marzak must have tipped the cops. I'd be around this neck of the woods. This is just wonderful.
Oh, are you always in trouble?
Look, I'm to trouble what honey is to a bear. Now, come on, keep that gas pedal down to the floor.
All right, that's the first portion of Dangerous Assignment, When a Friend is Not a Friend, starring Brian Donlevy from December 30th, 1950. More coming your way after these words. You know what, Lisa?
What, Carl? Carl.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're back from the news. Thanks, Roger. Thanks,
You're
Esmeralda.
Very welcome.
You know what?
What?
Guess what's coming your way in your email box in about, I don't know, 12 hours or so.
All right. Well, there's going to be a free radio classic, but you never know which one it's going to be.
Yeah.
Do you know?
No. Oh. I don't remember. I pick them out ahead of time. So we have a website,
folks. I'll have to count down the hours.
Yeah, we have a website for our listeners. It's called freeradioclassics.com, freeradioclassics.com. You can go there, and if you put in your first name, last name, and email address, we'll send you an email every single Monday, 52 Mondays a year, every year. And in that email will be an embedded classic radio show, a different classic radio show every single week, along with a picture of who's in that radio show, synopsis, cast list, all kinds of fun stuff. So we want to send 52 classic radio shows to you, all digitally remastered, every single year. Go to freeradioclassics.com and sign up. All right, time now for the conclusion to Dangerous Assignment.
It's no good, Sari. 3 miles out of the city and they're still on our tail.
Gaining any fever?
Neither are we, Optimist. And a half a mile's not enough lead. The cops behind me, ahead of me, the border, and who knows what. Lucky Mitchell right in the middle again.
The river is just around the bend, Stephen. Then our troubles will be over.
What do you mean? Hey! The turn!
Hang on, Stephen!
Huh?
Oh.
Hey, what are you stopping for? You crazy?
Get out!
Look, what's the big idea?
I see the river below the road. Huh? I place the car in first gear. And then I pull the hand throttle out a little, turn the wheel, and get out. Goodbye, car. Quick. Now, into the bushes. Now, this is fine. Now, we just wait while they go by.
Hey, pretty neat. Looks like you're an old hand at this, Sari.
Oh, it is not hard to learn.
But isn't running a car into the river sort of expensive?
It will go on your bill.
Oh, I see.
Here they come. So, now we go across country to the border. It's only a kilometer or two.
Lead the way. Once we get across the border, how far is it to the capital?
Oh, about 30 kilometers. Just across the border, we will meet a farmer with a horse-drawn wagon. He will take you to the next village. There, a man will be waiting for you in an automobile to take you the rest of the way.
I just hope we get there in time to keep Dr. Corvell from walking into that trap at his friend's house. Hey, wait a minute.
What is it?
Quiet. Somebody heading this way.
Probably the border patrol. Get down.
Yeah. I see them.
Perhaps we had better get closer together.
Yeah, I... Like I said, you seem to be an old hand at this.
Like I said, it is not hard to learn.
Hey, quiet. Here they come. Okay. I guess we can go now.
Do you really want to?
Oh, I...
Is it not much nicer here?
Much nicer, believe me, but I still have a job to do.
Oh, too bad.
Why?
Oh, I was just thinking we could run such a beautiful rat line together, Stephen.
I don't doubt it, but right now I...
Oh, very well, if you insist. The border patrol will not be back for half an hour, so plenty of time for us to slip across. Come along. There's the farm and his wagon, Stephen, waiting in the shadows.
Yeah, I see them.
Dimitri?
Yes, Holly!
Well, this is goodbye, Stephen. I wish you were not leaving.
I'll be back.
I wonder.
What do you mean?
I have the strangest feeling I will not be seeing you again.
That's a cheerful thing to say.
You had better hurry.
Yeah.
Wait.
Mm-hmm.
Now go.
After that... You think you won't be seeing me again? Oh, you can count on it.
Goodbye, Steve.
Okay, Dimitri, shove
up. Get up.
Hey, where's this village we're heading for, Dimitri?
Oh, 5 kilometers.
Wait, Why are you turning off the road?
This is a shorter way.
Oh. Many patrols in this area?
Not for another hour or two. That will be plenty of time.
Whoa! Hey, how come we're stopping?
Very simple. We're stopping because for you, it is the end of the trip.
Look, I... Well, a machine gun.
Quite right. Now get out of the wagon.
Okay. Now I know why Sari figured she wouldn't be seeing me again. She was working with the opposition right from the start.
It's a bad time for you to be talking about the stars, Mitchell.
What do you mean?
As soon as I press this trigger, for you it will be the finish. Mitchell.
Eh?
Turn around.
Oh, in the back, huh?
In the back. And right now.
Hello, Stephen.
What? Sari!
In trouble again, I see.
I sure was until you knocked off Dimitri here.
Oh, this man is not Dimitri.
What?
Oh, I thought there was something strange about his voice. Then right after you started in the wagon, I found the real Dimitri's body in the ditch. So I followed.
Well, you just got elected the girl I'd most like to have following me.
Ah, thank you, darling.
So, what happens now?
Well, I seem to remember that
I mean, how do I go about getting to the capital?
Business, business, always business. All right. I think I better take charge of you myself the rest of the way. Come along, we will go into the village and get a car.
Hey, look, where is this car anyway?
In the garage, just a few doors farther.
Good. I've got no desire to be wandering around these streets any more than I can help. Marzak's boys might spot me.
Stephen, wait.
What?
Some men in front of the garage.
Quick, into the alley.
Did they see us?
I don't think so. Who are they?
I don't know.
That's the garage where you keep the car, huh?
Yes.
They must have gotten tipped somehow. Great. What do we do now? It's too far to walk to the Capitol.
Oh, Stephen, look. They've started this way.
Must have seen us. Come on, down the alley.
Stop.
Are you kidding?
That door. An empty warehouse.
Okay. Hurry it up. Brother, dark in here.
We should be safe here.
Yeah, but it's not getting us any closer to Dr. Corvell.
Steve.
Yeah, steps outside in the alley. Quiet.
Good. They have passed by.
Yeah. Hey. If they're away from the garage, maybe we can get to the car after all. Wait a minute.
What?
Listen.
One of them is coming back.
Just one of them. Good. Stay down behind the crate. Now!
Steve, he must not call out.
He can't call. All the stranglehold on him. A little more. A little more. There.
Speaking of being an old hand at this sort of thing.
Look, his buddies will be back looking for him any minute. We gotta hurry.
All right, go around to the back of the warehouse. I will get the car and pick you up there. Hop in, Stephen.
Okay. You sure didn't waste any time.
No, of course not. We must get the business over with fast, no?
Well...
Stephen, I have good news for you.
Well, I could use some right now. What is it?
I learned from my man in the garage this Dr. Corvell was delayed getting across the border. He is now less than an hour ahead of us and he's riding in a truck.
Think we can overtake him before he gets to the city?
It will be fun trying, Stephen.
Hey, there's a car coming up at us fast.
Oh, I see it.
It's Marzak. Brother, what a tough guy to shake. Watch out. Watch out. He's pulling alongside.
This is for you, Mitchell.
Get down, Sari.
Let us make Marzak get down instead.
Hey.
Just giving him a friendly little nudge.
Oh, brother. Right into the ditch. A friendly little nudge yet. Remind me never to get you mad at me. Now, let's see if we can catch up with that truck. Sari jams the throttle to the floor and holds it there. The minutes tick off. This is the last lap of the race and the lap that pays off. Up ahead of us somewhere, Dr. Corvell in the truck riding innocently into a death trap, and Sari and I in the car trying to catch up with him before the trap is sprung. But at least we whittled down the opposition. Marzak's out of commission. Also the fake wagon driver who tried to machine gun me. That should leave just the friend whose house Dr. Corvell is heading for. Finally, we get to the outskirts of the city. Then Sari points up ahead.
There's the trap, Stephen.
Yeah. You sure that's the one Dr. Corvell's riding in?
Yes, I recognize it. It is my truck.
Wait a minute. How about the driver?
Oh, he's one of my men. He can be trusted.
Okay. As soon as we get up to the truck, pull alongside it and tell the driver
Stephen,
to...
look. Look, coming out of the side street.
Huh? A hay wagon.
Oh, it has stopped in the center of the road.
Oh, brother, the other team's throwing everything at us but the water boy.
I think I can get around it.
Hey, now look. Don't try to nudge that hay wagon into the ditch.
No, we will turn here.
Oh, brother, another inch and we'd have lined up with the rest of those tomatoes on that vegetable stand.
No, down the alley.
Hey, watch out, that car!
Are you still with me?
Yep, I got enough feathers on me to pass for Sitting Bull.
There, we should be around the hay wagon. Now we will turn back onto the road and catch the truck.
Hey, the truck's nowhere in sight.
Oh, but it could not have gotten far.
Oh, great. To get this close and then...
There, look. There it goes down the side street.
Yeah.
Oh, it's only a block ahead of us now.
Wait. It's stopping in front of that house up ahead. Dr. Gravel's getting out.
Oh, he's going up the stairs. Stephen, we are too late.
If I don't catch him now, this race is going to turn into a dead heat. Jam on the brakes. Dr. Gravel! Dr. Gravel, wait!
Who are you?
Steve Mitchell, government agent from the States. Get away from that door.
No, this is a trick. Let go of me.
Now, look.
My friend Miklos is inside. Let go.
Your friend Miklos has a bullet for you.
Take your hands off me.
Get down.
Miklos!
I've got him. Oh, boy. One more second would have been too many. I hope I never have to cut it that close again.
I cannot believe it. I thought Miklos was my friend. Yet all the while he was planning to betray me.
Well, it's all over now anyway. Come on, Dr. Corvell. Let's get you over to the legislature. We pile into Sari's car and head for the Capitol building. On the front steps are two men. One of them looks like an American. The other is Bisco, the guy who tried to shake Marzak for me earlier.
Mitchell?
Yeah?
Thompson from the legation. We just about given you up.
Me too. Looks like you didn't have much luck in shaking Marzak for me, Bisco.
I tried, but he was too clever for me. So I thought the best thing to do was come back here to the Capitol.
There's been an all-night session of the legislature inside, Mitchell. The whole thing's hanging in the balance. Could go either way.
Then I had better go inside immediately.
Yeah. Good thing you weren't delayed any longer, Dr. Corvell. Might have been too late to do any good.
Dr. Corvell, as an old friend, you must allow me the honor of escorting you inside personally.
But I
I will take your arm.
Very well.
I'll bet you're glad this deal's over, Mitchell.
You can say that again.
Rough go, hmm?
Well, if it'll give you a clue, I was framed for a jewel thief, shot at three times, and given a ride that would put any self-respecting roller coaster to shame.
Sounds like a real picnic.
Well, it's all over now, and... Hey.
What's the matter?
Funny. Dr. Corvell and Bisco walked right by the door to the assembly hall.
What?
Hey, looks like I spoke too soon, Thompson. I slipped down the stairs and around into the alley beside the building. There's a car parked by the side door. I hugged the wall. A moment later, the door opens and out comes Dr. Corvell, followed by Bisco.
Into the car, Corvell, and remember, I'm holding a gun on you in my pocket.
Well, guess Corvell's got no friends at all, Bisco, eh?
Mitchell!
Yeah, Mitchell!
Get your hands off me, I will kill you!
I've got your wrist. You pull that trigger now and you... What a hard guy to convince.
He shot himself.
Yeah, trying to do likewise to us.
Who is he? I have never seen him before.
That's what I figured. Come on.
When he took my arm, I could feel the gun in my side.
Didn't leave you much choice but to go with him.
Mitchell, you okay?
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Corvell. Better get in the assembly hall.
Yes. Thank you, Mitchell. Thank you.
I hope he's in time.
Hey, listen. I guess that's your answer, Thompson.
Yeah, I guess it is, all right. Well, I suppose you'll be wanting to get back right away, Mitchell. I can get you a plane reservation.
Well, as a matter of fact, Thompson, I already have my transportation all lined up.
Oh? Oh, You mean over there in the car?
Yeah.
Ah, I see your point.
Oh, no, you misunderstand.
Are you sure?
Nope, I'm just thinking of my own safety.
Safety? Look, air travel's pretty safe these days.
That's not what I mean. I've already seen what she does to guys she gets mad at. After all, you can't blame a guy for thinking of his own neck, can you?
Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell, is written by Bob Reif and Adrian Jondo, with music by Robert Armbruster, and is produced and directed by Bill Karn. Be with us again next week at this same time when Brian Donlevy, starring in the role of Steve Mitchell, will embark on another Dangerous Assignment. Dangerous Assignment came to you from Hollywood. Now, it's The Man Called X. Tomorrow, hear the big show on NBC.
Dangerous Assignment from December 30th, 1950, with When a Friend is Not a Friend, starring Brian Donlevy, is heard on NBC. If you were listening to the radio and were turning the dial and you heard a classic radio show, well, welcome aboard. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa Wolf and I are here every single Saturday and Sunday night, bringing you the best in classic radio programming. The Shadow, Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, all your favorites. They're right here on AM 720 every Saturday and Sunday night, 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. It is 12:08. Happy Monday. And this is where we play classic radio shows. In this hour, the Bickersons. We're also going to talk to the son of the creator of the Bickersons. The creator was Philip Rapp. We're going to talk to Paul Rapp in just a few minutes about the Bickersons. And then in our next hour, it's Murder at Midnight. All of this brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming crime drama T2 Trainspotting, a sequel to the 1996 film Trainspotting, and it takes place 20 years later.
Okay, what do they win?
The winner gets a pair of tickets to the Chicago Auto Show, courtesy of Fifth Third Bank.
All right, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
I have failed you, Anakin. I have failed you.
All right, who is that actor? We'll find our winner after these words.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that clip one more time.
I have failed you, Anakin. I have failed you.
And we've got Evan on the line from Mount Prospect. Hey, Evan.
Hi.
How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Excellent. Who is that actor?
That's Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor is absolutely right, and we are thrilled to give you a pair of tickets to see the Chicago Auto Show. It is courtesy of Fifth Third Bank, and it runs February 11th through the 20th. You can also register online to win a Navy Pier VIP experience this year, also sponsored by Fifth Third Bank. Go to WGNradio.com/Fifth Third to enter and win before February 19th. Thank you so much for calling in. We hope you enjoy the Auto Show and the rest of WGN Radio Theater.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Before we tune into the Bickersons, I want to invite my good pal, Paul Rapp, to the show. We're calling him far, far away, about halfway across the country. Paul, I should say across the world. Paul, how are you, buddy?
Very good. Thank you, Carl. Nice to hear from you.
Same here. Now, Paul is his father, Lisa, created the Bickersons, and also Baby Snooks and Daddy.
That's truly amazing. And Carl and I are sitting here and wondering if he created it based on something in his own life or if this was purely just fictitious.
Well, I can tell you a little bit about B.B. Smooks to begin with.
Sure.
He said he created that because of me.
Oh, how nice.
I was a little girl, as a boy, but that was because of Fanny Bryce. But it was just the little girl that you love to hate.
Right.
The constant problems and nagging of the father.
And then the Bickersons.
As far as the Bickersons, well, obviously, a lot of it would be based on his own marriage to my mother, which lasted over 75 years.
Oh, but there you go.
But more importantly, he said to me that he was just the world's best reporter because he put a tape recorder under every married couple's bed, and he just merely reported what was going on.
You know, the Bickersons, it's interesting, Paul, the Bickersons really, it kind of paved the way, didn't it, for shows like The Honeymooners and some of the other shows about families that kind of, you know, had problems but always, of course, loved each other very much. John and Blanche, they loved each other, but they definitely fought a lot.
Yes, very much so. I won't go into the story on The Honeymooners because you don't have the time for that. But nevertheless, it was strictly that John was a man who had to employ himself to many different jobs and worked very hard, and he only got a few hours sleep. And Blanche, his wife, all she really wanted was attention, she just wanted to talk and keep him up by talking, and he just wanted to sleep. But they did, in fact, very much love each other.
Yeah, that came through, you know, because even at the end of every episode, you know, they always made up and everything. And it was interesting, too. Danny Thomas was on the show for a while playing her brother, right? Amos was his name?
Right. It originated on Danny's show just as a little piece, Dad decided to use Don Ameche, who was the announcer, and Francis Langford, who was a singer, just because they were available. And from there, he spun it into a little longer episodes, and ultimately they got their own show.
Paul, did you go to the studio sometimes and watch these shows being broadcast live with your father?
The only thing I have a very good memory of is when my father wrote and directed and produced the very first variety show on television in 1949 on the Dumont Network in New York.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And the Bickersons were just a piece of that show. It had Benny Goodman's orchestra and other people, and Francis would do a song. And I would watch the rehearsals in New York in the TV studio and watch those performances.
How fascinating. Now, Paul has a website. I want to tell all of our listeners about this website because there's all kinds of great things on the Bickersons and also Baby Snooks at this website. Just go to Bickersons.com. So it's www.bickersons.com. That's the website, and you can there's audio. You can get some audio there along with some books too, right, Paul?
Right. There's a lot of audio CDs. There's even some DVDs of the pilots that my father did with Lou Parker and Virginia Gray as the Bickersons, and they're. There are a number of books written on Snooks and the Bickersons available actually through Bear Manor Publications, who puts out the books for me.
Why do you think people remember so fondly the Bickersons? You know, there's certain classic radio shows when you say The Shadow and you say, you know, maybe The Lone Ranger. But the Bickersons is up there. I mean, Baby Snooks and Daddy, too, don't get me wrong. I mean, no, that's a great show, too. But when people say the Bickersons, and really it wasn't on the air that long. I mean, like the Lone Ranger was on 30 years or something like that. But the Bickersons was only on a couple of years. Yet people today so fondly remember that show. What do you think the reason is for that?
Well, as I said before, the very obvious reason is it's everybody's marriage or every youngster's envision of what their parents are like. As a matter of fact, I get a lot of fan mail from younger audiences, but it's a property that is worldwide. In more than 30 countries, there are productions. The audio is played. It's simply marriage. Prince Charles and Lady Diana, when they had their marriage, said that they often felt they were the Bickersons.
Hmm.
I've had many people tell me, celebrities and what have you, that Sean Penn said he and Madonna were the Bickersons. it's marriage is what it is.
Yeah.
That's why
yeah.
It's universal.
Right.
I think we all, everybody who's been married or had a relationship can see a piece of themselves yeah. in that character.
Well, and I have to say, I think the other reason, everything you just said makes a lot of sense, but the other reason is the writing. And, you know, that obviously is a testament to your father who wrote the show. The writing is just, it's so funny. I mean, it's so hilarious. I mean, these were written for the 1940s. I mean, the show we're going to play is from 1947, yet it still holds up so well today. People can so relate to the comedy. So your dad really, really was a visionary when it came to writing this kind of comedy.
Well, he always had one thing in mind whenever he wrote anything, in fact, was not to be topical.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it lasts so long, because it doesn't matter how many years from now you listen to it. It will be fresh. And the same was with Baby Snooks, too.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the endearing things about it, is that it's not topical.
Yeah, so true. We're out of time, but I want to remind our listeners, go to Bickersons.com. Bickersons.com is where you can actually reach out to Paul also, and you can purchase some of the albums on digital download. I think there's CDs and obviously the DVDs as well. Paul, thanks so much, and thanks for allowing us to play an episode of The Bickersons here from 1947. I want people to hear how great this show is, and make sure everyone visit Bickersons.com. Paul, I'll talk to you real soon. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much. Very much.
Thanks, Paul. All right, we're going to listen to an episode from March 16th, 1947. It's called $50 Ticket for the Horse Races. Here's part one, Don Ameche, Francis Langford.
From Hollywood, it's Dream Time. Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Dream Shampoo are pleased to present the 14th in a series of new programs produced by Carlton Alsop and starring Don Ameche.
Let me sleep, will you, Blanche?
Francis Langford.
I just can't stand that snoring.
And Danny Thomas.
I just want to say I'm sorry I couldn't be with you last week, and may I take this opportunity to express my sincerest thanks to a great guy who pinch hit for me, Red Skelton. And by the way, where's our host? Oh, Don Ameche.
Hi, Danny. I'm glad to see you back.
Thanks, thanks. By the way, Don, I listened last week. I heard you tell Francis that during my spare time I was a babysitter, and I resent it.
Well, do you deny it?
No, I just resent it.
You know, Danny, you'd get much better jobs if you learned to make friends quickly.
But how?
Well, be neighborly. The philosophy is to walk up to even a total stranger, throw your arms around him and say, let's be friends.
Yeah, I did that the other day and I got slugged.
Why?
I don't know. It just doesn't seem to work on girls.
You know, Danny, I think your problem lies in the fact that you're ignorant of the social graces. How much schooling have you had?
I went to school for 3 years.
Oh, well, I went to school for 14 years.
Well, some people learn faster than others. Don, if I had my choice, I'd have gone to Vassar.
Oh, Danny, Vassar is devoted to girls.
What do you think I'm devoted to, ducks?
Now, Danny, you know, schooling isn't enough. To be a true gentleman, one must have a background of generations of culture.
Mr. Amici, it may interest you to know that I have an Anglo-Saxon genealogy.
Are you sure?
How can I be sure? I don't even know what it means.
Thought so. You see, Danny, if you're going to make friends, you must avoid making embarrassing social errors. For instance, now, the last time you were at my house, you finished dinner and you put your feet on the table.
Oh, now, wait, Don.
Well, you did, didn't you?
Well, I did put my feet on your table, but I took my shoes off first. I mean, you're just trying to embarrass me, that's all. Look, I know all about that etiquette stuff, like when you take your girl to a pool room, you're supposed to let her shoot first. You're not kidding me.
If Emily Post is listening, you're making the best years of her life the worst.
What am I supposed to do? Eat chewing gum with a knife and fork?
Say, Francis, Elsa Maxwell's having an old-fashioned bundling party tonight. You want
to
come?
Oh, I'd love to.
Hey, could I come?
I said bundle. No loose packages.
Oh, he can come, can't he, Don?
I guess so, but I hope he doesn't embarrass us.
What do you mean?
Well, he thinks he's a social lion. He doesn't even know which part of the olive to throw away.
Maybe I don't, Don, but let me tell you something. I don't need culture. You can have your etiquette, and I don't want to be a member of Cafe Society. Who wants to drink coffee from a demitasse?
Well, what's wrong with coffee in a demitasse?
Nothing, but did you ever try to dunk a donut in that small cup? Don, I'm afraid classy living is not for me. I was meant for the more horrible things in life, like drinking coffee from a coffee cup. And who cares whether I go to your party? 2-1, they'll serve turkey. And who cares for turkey? If all the turkeys in the world were laid end to end, that's the part I'd get. I'm satisfied to have my dinner where I have it every night, at a hot dog stand called the Heroic Lunch. You just stand up and take it. And who wants to be tied down to tradition? In society, one must tub every day. Hooray. It's all right, I like the tub, but if there's no hot water, I basin.
Well, you know, just as well you don't go to the party, Danny. You are definitely not a member of Cafe Society, and the girls would find you very dull.
Oh, they would, huh?
Yes, these ladies of society have a very high IQ.
So what's an IQ? As far as I'm concerned, an IQ is something you look for in a girl after you've looked at everything else. There's one thing that bothers me. Am I such a social outcast because I'm not a member of Cafe Society? Is it such a big thing to go to Ciro's or Macambo's every night? After all, what is a Hollywood nightclub? Want to know? I'll tell you. It's a place where a table of people from Toledo look over at a table of people from Milwaukee and say, gee, these movie stars look just like the folks back home. Culture. Etiquette. There's such a thing as being too proper.
Oh, come now, Danny. You're exaggerating.
You don't believe me, huh?
No.
Now, Mr. Amici, I shall prove my point. Exhibit A.
Did you ever hear the story of Swanky Bill? If he weren't so ultra, he'd be living still. Why, when he smoked a cigar, people used to say, he had more class than the fellow who threw it away. He had lots of dash when he flicked that ash. Now Bill retained his manners and his cultured air, although he thought the judge's verdict quite unfair. He gave him 7 years, but William wasn't grim. He was so polite, he asked the judge to pardon him. What a well-bred lad. What finesse he had. Now when he got out, he met up with the social crowd. And he was never vulgar or uncouth or loud. And with his attire, he was so genteel. He wore the very smartest jewels a man could steal. He was really great, with such perfect taste. While dining with a duke, from whom he stole a G, he raised his little finger when he drank his tea. And as a result, poor William died. Because the tea wasn't tea, it was cyanide. He was so well-bred.
but he's awfully dead. That's the end of Exhibit A. Exhibit B. I shall never forget the party I attended, given by Lady Nelson in honor of her daughter, Half Nelson.
All right, let's take a break. From the Bickersons, from March 16th, 1947, when we come back and resume this show, you're going to hear a Bickerson sketch where John and Blanche are verbally sparring. I think you'll enjoy that. Let's take a quick break on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. The girl with the big dimples next to me, Lisa Wolf. The girl with the kind of wild and willy hair is Elif Garris. It's kind of wild and willy tonight.
Really?
Were you in the wind? Was the wind blowing it a little bit?
No, it's just my natural curl.
You should never talk about a woman's hair, you know? It's very, it's dangerous territory.
Yeah, hair and weight.
I mean it
weight,
in a nice way.
Though.
I meant it in
too.
A nice way. It's wild and willy. That's a compliment.
I know. Thank you.
Whew. Got out of that
sure.
one. That pedaled right out of that one.
We'll see about that, pedaling out.
All right, we're listening to the Bickersons. Let's go back to March 16th, 1947. Tanamichi, Francis Langford.
It was a sultry night, and I was on the terrace smoking a cigarette in a dinner jacket. I don't know why a cigarette should be in a dinner jacket, but that's society for you. Suddenly, a woman notices me.
My name's Patricia.
Mine's Daniel. Nice meeting you and all that sort of rot.
Well, I don't believe we've ever met before.
Hardly. I've been traveling. The Far East.
Oh, was it interesting?
The Far East? Oh, yes. Full of Far Easterners, you know. Yes, I spent 3 years at the American Hotel in Shanghai.
Why, how extremely weird. How did you ever manage with the food shortage over there?
Ingenuity, my dear, ingenuity. I had a cow in my hotel room.
How could you get a cow in your hotel room?
We registered as Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, it sounds simply fabulous, old boy. By the way, are you married?
Oh, yes. Charming girl. Charming.
Anyone I might know?
I doubt it. Don't know her myself.
Come now, of course you know her.
No, really. I married her on an impulse. You see, her pater pulled a gun on me.
Her pater?
Yes, her mother, you know.
Terribly fascinating. Oh, I'll wager you're the type who likes to sit around the house with a pipe.
That's right.
Oh, you're a dreamer?
No, a plumber.
Oh, how droll. I meant the kind of pipe from which a man draws dreams. The material for smoke rings.
Oh, but I can't blow smoke rings.
Why not?
Square mouth.
Sir, you're pulling my leg.
How else can I get them even?
Excuse me, Lady Patricia, but this man is obviously insulting you.
Oh, no, I was just being gay. You see, my friends call me a buffoon, a jester.
You, sir, are boorish, crass, overwhelmingly illiterate, and completely repugnant.
How much of that is good?
Please leave these premises now. See to it that my political friends in England, France, Italy, the Netherlands, and the Balkans forbid you to enter their country. Now, what have you to say?
How are things in Glacamora? Now, the moral of the story, and there must be a moral, seems to evade me, but let's not quarrel, for we have a delightful surprise for you. We're gonna talk about the wonders of Dream Shampoo.
Dream girl Frances Langford with Carmen Dragon and his orchestra sings There Is No Greater Love.
There is no greater love than
no greater love, no heart so true. There is no greater thrill than what you bring to me. No sweeter song than what you sing.
Amici and Francis Langford as John and Blanche Bickerson in The Honeymoon is Over, written by Phil Rapp. The Bickersons have retired. Mrs. Bickerson lies tense and awake in the darkness as poor husband John, victim of a rare type of insomnia which keeps the patient in a complete lethargy for 8 hours at a time, offers valid proof of his agonizing affliction. Listen.
This has been going on since 9 o'clock. Oh, please, not that again.
Quit it, Blanche.
John, there must be something that'll put a stop to that hideous snoring. Why do you do it?
Do what, Blanche?
Snore. Snore.
Okay.
John, I'm going out of my mind. For years, you've been telling people you've got insomnia. And you not only sleep like a log, but you sound like you're sawing it.
Very funny.
It isn't funny, it's tragic. There's the clock again. 2 o'clock. I've counted that thing chime 45 times since we went to bed, and I still haven't slept.
Well, how do you expect to sleep? You're going to lie there counting chimes. Throw the darn clock out. It's keeping me awake, too.
You wouldn't wake up if we had Big Ben in the room.
Big Ben who?
I'm a nervous wreck. I've got crow's feet around my eyes. My forehead's all wrinkled. My chin is sagging. I'm beginning to look like an old hag. It's true, isn't it?
I wouldn't say that.
Why not, John?
I'll be awake for the rest of the night.
You do think it's true, though, don't you?
What's true?
I'm beginning to look like an old hag.
You are not beginning to look like an old hag.
Why do you emphasize beginning?
All right, you're not beginning to look like an old hag.
That sounds even worse.
Well, how do you want me to say it?
Say I look beautiful.
Okay, I look beautiful. Good night.
Oh, I don't know how a man could be so cruel. Is it any wonder I'm getting old before my time?
What time is it?
It's after 2 o'clock and I haven't slept a wink.
Well, go to sleep.
You can't stand their side of me, can you, John?
I can stand it fine.
Before we were married, you used to say such beautiful, poetic things. You don't anymore.
Oh, well, Blanche, how do you expect me to feel poetic at 2 o'clock in the morning?
You used to feel that way at 3 o'clock before we were married. Say something poetic.
Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty had a
great
fall.
Oh, stop it. You're just trying to irritate me now.
Well, what do you want me to say?
You know what I want you to say.
Okay. Blanche, when I look into your eyes, time stands still. Are you satisfied?
No.
But why not?
That might also mean I have a face that would stop a clock.
Well, if the shoe fits, wear it. I want to get some sleep.
You're not going to make me believe I'm hideous and ugly, John Pickerson. Huh. It isn't so long ago I won a beauty contest in my hometown.
Long enough.
I never hear you tell any of your friends about it.
Oh, Blanche, a man can't go around telling his friends that his wife was Miss Clam Harbor Lighthouse of 1931.
You make it sound as though I were the only girl in the contest. What about my sister, Clara?
What about her? Plenty. You won it, didn't you?
I'd like to hear you talk that way about Gloria Gooseby.
Oh, now, don't start with Gloria Gooseby.
The way you drool every time you look at her, you'd think she was Miss America.
I don't drool when I see anybody. I hate Gloria Gooseby.
Then why do you keep inviting her here to dinner?
I didn't invite her. You did.
Don't change the subject. If it weren't for the fact that her husband Leo is such a nice person, I wouldn't have either of them in the house. And the dinner was awful.
Well, you cooked it, Blanche.
Yes, but the thought of that horrible Gloria Gooseby coming to dinner got me all confused and it ruined everything. The minute I turned my back, the roast caught on fire and I had to throw soup on it to put it out.
You should have thrown that pie on it, too.
There was nothing wrong with the pie.
I hate lemon meringue and you know it. It
wasn't lemon meringue, it was apple pie.
Well, what was that yellow stuff on top?
Crust got burned and I had to put some unguentine on it.
Thank heaven I didn't eat any.
No, but your girlfriend stuffed herself with 4 pieces, the glutton.
She is not my girlfriend, and quit talking about her so I can get some sleep.
You wouldn't look at her twice if she didn't wear those brazen dresses.
I would, too. I mean, I don't care what she wears.
It's a shame Leo is such a little mouse. Believe me, if I were Gloria Gooseby's husband, I'd show her a thing or two.
Mm.
Somebody ought to turn her over and give her a good spanking.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you're thinking, John Pickerson.
I'm not thinking anything. Why don't you let me sleep, Blanche?
I'm not going to stand for it much longer, John. Ugh. You keep putting on that innocent attitude, but you don't fool me. I wouldn't feel so bad, except I'm so sick I could die.
What's the matter now?
I'm sick. I get fainting spells all the time, and the doctor doesn't know what it is. I know I'll never recover.
Oh, don't be silly. You'll recover. You've got a healthy constitution.
Well, I have not.
You have, too. You had pneumonia and you got well. You had the flu, you got well. You had the mumps, you got well. You've had 60 diseases and you always got well. Never saw such a healthy woman in all my life.
But what about these fading spells?
You'll recover from those, too. But if you ever get lockjaw, you'll bust. Why don't you faint now so I can sleep?
Of all the unsympathetic, unfeeling wretches, if you ever lost me, it wouldn't mean a thing to you.
Oh, wouldn't it, though?
Well, you don't have to sound so eager.
I'm not eager. I'm just sleepy.
It's a good thing we don't have any children. I can just imagine what kind of a life a poor little child would have in this house.
Mm.
To have a father who constantly raves and rants, selfish and thoughtless, a man who can't bear the sight of his own child.
What are you talking about?
Me sick in bed and the poor little infant crying in his crib, crying his heart out for a little attention.
Blanche.
Why don't you feed the baby, John?
Baby.
John, why do you hate children so much?
Because I can't bear them.
know, but why do you hate them?
Blanche, all you want to do is keep me awake. Isn't that right?
You would have been asleep long ago if you hadn't kept me awake with your snoring.
Well, can I help it if I snore?
Yes, you can. Dr. Marvin tells me there's something wrong with your nasal passages.
Yeah.
He says you have a deviated septum. Why don't you let him fix it?
Okay, I'll have it fixed next week.
You say it, but you won't do it. Let him fix it now.
What?
Go on, get up and let the doctor pull out your septum.
Blanche, are you out of your mind? You think I'm going to let that broken-down doctor hammer on my nose at 3 o'clock in the morning?
He doesn't hammer on your nose, he chisels.
You can say that again. I've seen his bill.
Well, you're going to have to do something. As it is, neither of us get any sleep.
Why don't you have him sew up your ears?
You wouldn't argue at all if you'd just be a little nice for a minute.
You've been up to something again, Blanche. What is it?
I haven't been up to anything. I just want to hear you tell me you love me, that's all.
Well, you know I do.
You never say it.
Oh, I say it all the time.
Say it now.
I love you.
How much do you love me?
How much do you need?
$50.
Oh, now, wait a minute,
You
Blanche.
Promised me, John.
I know, but I can't give you anything extra this month.
That's what you told me last month.
Well, I kept my word, didn't I? Now, what do you want $50 for?
The rent.
Oh, the rent is right here. It's in the cookie jar.
No, it isn't.
It is, too. I looked there yesterday.
You didn't look today.
What? Now, Blanche, don't tell me you spent that money on something foolish.
Oh, no. I gave it to a bookbinder.
A bookbinder? What do we need with a bookbinder? Our book is in fine condition.
Not that kind of bookbinder. This man goes to the racetrack. He's a trout.
Trout? The racetrack? Blanche, did you bet that money with a bookmaker? Put the lights on.
Now, don't get excited, John. He brought back the ticket. Here.
Oh, a $50 win ticket. How could you take my hard-earned money and gamble it away on a horse? I work my fingers to the bone, and you squander every penny I make. You never see me betting horses. I never been to a racetrack in my life. What's the name of the horse?
Valdina Rip.
A bum. A worn-out goat that hasn't won a race since Del Mar. Oh, Blanche, why did you do it? Did he win?
No, he ran second.
$50 tossed away. Ugh.
Why are you tearing up the ticket, John?
Because it's no good. I ought to make you eat the pieces. This is the worst thing you've ever done in your life, Blanche. At least you could have played him the place.
Well, don't throw the pieces away, John. What makes you so sure it's no good?
Well, you played the horse to win, didn't you?
Yes.
And he ran second, didn't he?
Yes.
Well, then the ticket's worthless. Here, watch your $50 go out the window there. I knew you had something on your mind.
I'm sorry, John.
Yeah, what's the difference? Who won the race, do you know?
Yes, I heard it on the radio.
Well, who won it?
Disqualified.
Disqualified?
Yes, the announcer said the winner of the race was disqualified.
Oh, I wish I was dead.
Good night, John.
Reminding you, never before Dreen, yes, never before Dreen, could any shampoo reveal 100% of the natural luster of your hair. Listen next Sunday for another pleasant half hour with Don Ameche, Danny Thomas, Francis Langford, Carmen Dragon and his orchestra. And now here is
Don Ameche wishing you good days, good nights, and good luck until we meet again.
That's Dreen Time with the Bickersons from March 16th, 1947. Don Ameche, Francis Langford, along with Danny Thomas, Gail Gordon in that cast. And that was written by Phil Rapp, which is Paul Rapp's father, and is heard on the NBC Radio Network. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. No music? No music, Miss
I was working on it. It's not loading. Now I'm having the issues, Esmeralda.
I'll tell you. Thankfully, I don't make any mistakes around
here. Thankfully, we don't have any issues now, right,
well,
Carl?
Well, and I said me.
We don't have any issues.
Me? Although, you know what? Those two live reads that you did, they were the first time you ever did them. Yep. They were flawless.
Thank you.
Man, I was wow. Lisa,
I'm a reading teacher. Did you forget about that? I'm a reading specialist. So I am a special reader.
Let's name all the things you are. First of all.
Don't do it.
You're
all the things I am. Depends who you ask.
You're a pain in the neck. No,
exactly.
Not at all. No, okay. So you have a master's degree in teaching. And you have a master's degree in advertising.
Okay, I have a bachelor's in psychology, a master's in advertising, and a master's in teaching, but I'm a reading specialist.
Well,
I like to read.
You like teaching. I mean, you liked school, didn't you?
I love school.
You have a bachelor's, too? So you have two masters and a bachelor's?
You have to have a bachelor's in order to get a master's.
Well, I know that.
Okay.
I thought it was a separate thing, like a third thing.
It
like
is.
You stayed in school for like...
Well, it was 4 years of college, and it was 2.5 years. Well, 3 years for advertising and 2.5 years for education.
Yeah, see, me, I couldn't wait to get out of school. I mean, I liked school, but I wanted to make money. I wanted to get out there.
I was making money. I was teaching. I was teaching.
I was like, okay, I'm
done.
I did 4 years. I want to get going here.
I was like that too.
I love the campus. I love the educational atmosphere. I love being in a school atmosphere.
And when I say I did 4 years, I mean I went to the fourth grade.
You did first, second, third, and fourth grade.
I thought you were gonna say you studied. Astronomy. You took up space.
No, I studied
to be an astronaut. You kind of mangled that.
I studied
one,
to be an astronaut. I took up space.
Boom.
All right. So in this hour of the WGN Radio Theater, Murder at Midnight, a show from 1947 called The Creeper. Stick around for that. This is all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming romantic fantasy. Carl's rolling his eyes already.
Oh, boy.
Beauty and the Beast, a live-action remake of Disney's...
It's like a love story. I don't
want to
watch that.
...1991 animated film. I have a special place in my heart for Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, I don't have a romantic bone in my body.
Oh,
so.
I love Beauty. You know, Gaston is a great character. He's my favorite.
Who?
Gaston.
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 Gaston?
Gaston.
Oh.
You know what, Carl? He's a little bit like you.
What?
Yeah.
He is?
He has some same
He's handsome and tall?
He is handsome. He has some of the same characteristics
very
as you.
Virile and great looking and...
And some other things.
And he sings great. Yes, just like me.
Yeah, I'm sure some of our listeners know what I'm referring to.
All right.
Anyhow, the winner will get a Twilight Zone audio drama 4-CD set hosted by Stacey Keach.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Nigel in The Devil Wears Prada.
I can get another girl to take your job in 5 minutes. One who really wants it.
All right, 312-981-7200. Who is that great actor? We'll find our winner after these words.
And we are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to hear that clip one more time.
I can get another girl to take your job in 5 minutes. One who really wants it.
Okay, we have Mark on the line. Hi, Mark.
Yes, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Great. Do you know that actor?
Yeah, that's Stanley Tucci.
Stanley Tucci, it is. And we were just talking about what a great actor he is, and how we all really like him in The Devil Wears Prada. You are a winner. We're so glad to give you a Twilight Zone audio drama. It's a 4-CD set hosted by Stacey Keach. They're fantastic, and we hope that you enjoy them, too.
Oh, I would love that. Thank you so much.
Oh, perfect. Thank you for calling.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. Real quick, Stanley Tucci's story.
Ready? Okay, great.
So years and years and years ago,
okay,
in one of the first movies, you know, I used to be an actor, and before I got into the producing side, and in one of the first movies I ever acted in, it was called The 18th Angel. We shot it in Rome, and let me try to think who was, Stanley was in the movie, and I had a decent part in the movie. I think it ended up getting cut out.
Probably.
I saw the finished cut of it, and I was in the finished cut. But then in the theater when I went to see it, my part
wasn't
was in there. So I guess I
did
wasn't.
Did they fly you out to Rome?
Oh, yeah. I played a priest in it. I played a priest. And
well, that's a good role for you.
Yeah, it was a good role. And it was an interesting movie. It was actually written by David Seltzer, who wrote The Omen. So it was, it was a supernatural film. And he's got a great part in it, Stanley Tucci. And so I got to know him pretty well, being in the movie, having a part. And I'll never forget, like, there was a day we worked, like, I don't know, 17 hours straight, and I was, and Stanley's older than I am. He's probably a good 7, 8, 10 years older than me. And so I'm, like, just ready to go to bed, I can't wait to get done and go to bed. And he comes up to me, he goes, "Are we going out?" I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Are we going to go out? Come on, it's Rome, let's go, I'm like, "We just worked 16 hours, Stanley." He wanted to go
out. Did you go?
I didn't know.
You didn't go?
No, he wanted a party. I didn't.
Okay, are you kicking yourself now?
No, I went out with him other nights. Oh. But he was like, come on, let's go. I'm like, what? This guy has a lot of energy.
Yeah, Stanley Tucci. I admire that.
Yeah, not me. I like to sleep.
I know you do. Every break you can.
Man, I'll tell you. All right, so it's time now for Murder at Midnight. This was a good series. It came to ABC Radio in 1946. Raymond Morgan was a former Long Island minister, and he left the cloth for the excitement of radio. He was the host of this. So a former Long Island minister is the guy who announces the show. 6 years in syndication. It was broadcast out of New York. It had great actors from New York. And this particular episode stars Ann Shepherd. Let's go back to May 16th, 1947, for the Creeper on Murder at Midnight.
Murder at Midnight.
That look in his eyes, like a madman. He wants to kill me. Someone does. Like the other three, lying on the floor in a pool of blood. Almost 12 o'clock. Midnight. Any minute now, there'll be a ring. Or a knock.
Midnight. The witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in The Creeper. And now, Murder at Midnight. On this program, we bring you the best and most blood-curdling stories ever written. And so now we bring you a tale which you may have heard before, a tale which we consider a classic in terror and suspense. The Creeper by Joseph Ruskall.
In the kitchenette of the New York apartment, a man and his wife listened to the evening news broadcast.
New York. The unknown killer called the Creeper has struck again, adding a third female corpse to his toll. Virginia Peters, a comely waitress, was found strangled to death in her third floor apartment early this morning while her radio blared. As in the previous murders, a note was found scrawled on the wall with the victim's lipstick and the plea, "For heaven's sake, catch me before I kill more. I cannot control myself." Oh. Police insist...
Now, why'd you turn it off?
Oh, how awful. Awful. I'm in this very neighborhood.
Let's hear the rest. It's very interesting.
Oh, you... Don't go turning that radio on again, Steve Grant. Heard enough. I'll go out of my mind, for heaven's sake.
That's it. A good, solid clue.
What is?
For heaven's sake. How many men ever use that expression?
Oh, shut up.
Okay, Mrs. Grant. Pass the biscuits, my little pigeon.
Pass the biscuits. E-D-D. Three women in 3 days murdered in cold blood by a mad fiend right here in Washington Heights. I'm too sick to go out, too scared to stay in. The lock's broke. He sits there eating, eating, eating. Pass the biscuits.
There's nothing wrong with my appetite, my love.
Of course. That's what costs you your job on the police force. When I even think of...
Some men drink to escape. I eat.
Escape what? What?
An ugly tongue, a beautiful face, and a roving eye. In short, a wife.
So you're starting that again, you and your crazy jealousy.
Yeah, maybe that's the Creeper's way of escaping too, Georgia. Who knows?
Shut up. Go ahead and get a divorce. Go ahead. Can I help it if men look at me? I don't know why you come home at all. Where do you go? What do you do with yourself? Where were you this morning? Why'd you come back?
To eat. But someday I'll lose my appetite for that too. Yeah, and when I do, my dear, there'll be no escape. And now I'm off again. Kiss. Still using stage lipstick. Wipe it off. How many times must I tell you? You're married now, remember?
Steve, wait.
Yeah?
At least go buy my medicine.
Sorry, I got no time.
Don't leave me here alone. Stay home this evening. Please, I'm afraid.
Oh, don't be silly, pet. Nothing will happen to you. You got a doorman here, an elevator boy, Mrs. Stone across the hall, a phone. You're safe enough.
But the night lock, it doesn't work.
Oh, now you can't lock me out anymore.
It doesn't catch. Something's happened to it since last night. Steve.
Get a new one.
I can't get a locksmith. I've tried all day. Steve, please. If I want to phone you, where will you be?
Out. Goodbye. Take care of your cold.
Steve Grant.
Huh? Well, if it isn't old Pearly Chase, how are you?
Here you got thrown off the force, Steve.
Yeah, I hear you got thrown off the news, Pearly.
You heard wrong. I wasn't fired. I was just warned.
I wasn't fired either. Just suspended for 3 days, eating a lamb chop at Casey's when I should have been ringing in from the box at 162nd with all that trouble up there. On my way to headquarters now for reinstatement. I eat too much, my trouble is.
I drink too much. Hey, you're living up at the Heights, Steve.
Yeah.
That's funny, me too.
Yeah?
Hey, you're married now to a beautiful and lovely young... with admiration.
Say it again.
I think I knew her. Wasn't her stage name Georgia Dixon?
Yeah, that's her. I love that wench, but... women. How does a guy handle them? You know, maybe the creeper has the right method.
Thank you for taking the words out of my mouth. Who's the creeper, Steve? Any angles?
You tell me and I'll split the reward with you. Say, what do you think of Inspector Bradley's inside job theory?
Nuts. Every janitor's a creeper? And as for that doorman Jim Ellis... just because he worked at two of the three murder apartments? Pure coincidence. Anyway, they've released him. One thing, though, and I don't think even Bradley's put it together yet.
Yeah?
In all three cases, just before the creeper struck, the door locks had already been tampered with.
You don't say.
You got a theory?
Well, sure. I mean, you take that note on the wall. For heaven's sake, in every case... for heaven's sake, catch me before I kill more.
I cannot control myself.
Right. Now, what man uses an expression like that? You want the lowdown? It's just this. A creeper is a woman.
A gimmick, huh?
Yeah.
Like the height of the message from the floor is a trick, 6 feet. And yet I'll lay odds the creeper's no more than a guy your height, say, or mine. 5'9", just like us, you or me. Only crazy.
How do you figure that?
How do I figure lots of things? How do I know where the creeper's gonna strike next?
You do?
Certainly. The creeper's not so smart, he's just crazy. You play along crazy and you're one jump ahead of him. That's the trouble with Inspector Bradley. Why, he's up a tree. You expect logical clues from a madman? You play along crazy, make out you're the creeper. And what do you get?
Well, go ahead, let's see.
All right, the victims are all redheads, every one. You've noticed that, of course. 3 in 3 days?
Yeah, now that you mention
it. They all lived in the Heights, right? Agnes Martin, Jane Krutsky, Virginia Peters?
Right.
What was the number of the apartment in each case? Agnes lived in 1A, Jane 2B, Virginia 3C. Don't ask me the why or wherefore. Don't ask me the logic. Just play along crazy. See what I mean? Where's he going to strike next?
Huh? I don't catch you.
The next victim of the creeper also lives in the Heights. She's a redhead. Her night lock's been tampered with. She's going to get hers today, and her apartment number's 4D. Well, why are you looking at me? Don't you like my arithmetic?
Pearly, my wife's a redhead. We live in the Heights. And our apartment number is... You're just a boozy reporter.
Your apartment number?
4D, I told you.
4D, of course. It's pretty late, but I'll have it delivered. I was busy admiring your lipstick, Mrs. Grant. I've nothing like it in stock. 4D, I should have guessed it anyway.
Why?
Well, a face is a number. Believe me, since you've moved into the neighborhood, Mrs. Grant, for me it has a special number, like Double Dandy Delicious Dream. 4Ds, you see?
Oh, go on. Bet you tell that to every customer, female.
I'm a ladies' man? Like the creeper? What did I say? What's going on in this block? Raw nerves. You can't joke. The creeper, the creeper. That's all I hear all day. It's mass hysteria. There ain't such an animal.
You don't think so?
I assure you, Mrs. Grant, it's a fairy tale for circulation of the tabloids. I'll send your prescription up with the boy.
No, I'll just wait here for it.
Well, it'll take some time. You should go right home and stay there if you're just getting over the flu. I'll tell you what. I'll deliver it myself. It'll be a pleasure.
No. I'll wait. I may not go right back. I don't want to be there alone. I'm afraid.
Very well. Suit yourself. Have a seat. For heaven's sake, stop me before I kill more.
What?
I cannot control myself. Wait! I was only joking, Mrs. Grant. Wait, Mrs. Grant, your prescription.
You, Mrs. Stone.
Why, yes. What's your hurry, dear?
I just got such a scare. Since these awful murders in this neighborhood.
Yes, isn't it terrible? I'm simply frightened to death myself. You walking home?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, I'll go with you. It's good we live in the same house.
At least if I had a double lock, but the night one doesn't work.
Oh, really? Well, I have a chain lock besides, and still
the way it is, I sit and shiver when there's a sound at the door. Can't get a locksmith. Tried all day, but they're all so busy. Mr. Frank on the corner promised to, but didn't know when. Why are they all so busy?
Well, my dear, because every woman in the neighborhood's changing theirs, too. Simply a nightmare. Oh, but don't you worry. We'll stay together this evening. Mr. Stone's out, too. Think of it. We've never visited, though we live right across the hall from each other. Isn't that like a big city, for heaven's sake? Or would you rather I dropped in on you?
Well, I don't
well,
know.
Well, make it your place, then. Isn't it horrible, the ghastly things they're saying? The theories one doesn't know what to think next. You believe the latest?
The latest?
That maybe it's a woman, the creeper?
A woman?
Can you beat it? I just can't imagine how in the world the police figure that, for heaven's sakes. Can you? I say, can you, Miss Grant?
I don't know. I was just thinking of something my husband
Though
said.
I can see where a married woman now, if her husband was faithless, well, I can understand such a theory, because you take my husband now. You've met Mr. Stone, haven't you? Oh, Mrs. Grant, why on earth are you staring at me like that, for heaven's sakes?
I don't feel well. I must get home. I feel faint.
But Mrs. Grant, well, for heaven's sake.
Sobbing with terror, a woman with red hair runs up the dark street, back to her apartment and the door with the broken lock, as the hands of the clock move on towards 12 o'clock and...
Murder at midnight.
To go out on a limb here, Lisa. Don't hold me to this. That was in Oregon.
That's going to be on inappropriate clips, but that was very ominous music. I like it.
So that was in Oregon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I'm going to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first portion of The Creeper, starring Ann Shepherd in Murder at Midnight. Let's take a quick break, and it's more here on... No break. Okay, we're not going to take a break. We're going to go to news. You like that?
I like it.
All right. Well, when we come back from the news, we're going to go to the conclusion of Murder at Midnight. And next week, I just want to remind our listeners again, we have a late start next Saturday. Late start. We have a 12:30 start. I'm not sure why. Maybe there's some kind of sports or something like that. They don't ask us to start late too often. So we have to do it when they say to do it.
Right. So 12:30 on Saturday, yeah. But a regular show on Sunday from 11
right.
to 2.
Yeah. So mark your calendar for that. And don't forget that we have a website that we'd love you to sign up to, because it's absolutely free. There's no cost. And you will be sent 52 classic radio shows every year via email. We'll send you 52 shows, one a week, in an email. And in that email is an embedded classic radio show, digitally remastered. Sound quality is fabulous, yes.
So if they sign up now, will they get their radio show today?
Yeah, yes.
So there you go.
If you sign up right now, you'll get your first email. Because we do it every Monday, you'll get an email. Yeah, so sign up. Just go to freeradioclassics.com, freeradioclassics.com, and put your name and your email address. Now, here's how it works. You do that, you're subscribed, and until you unsubscribe, hopefully you won't ever unsubscribe, but until you do, you're going to get an email every Monday. And I'm not talking about just four in a month. You're going to get 52 a year, every year. So that's a lot of classic radio shows. What I do is I Bluetooth it to my car and I listen to them in the car. I love to listen to classic radio.
Yeah, it's a
good plan. All right, so you'll get a different show. Maybe you'll get The Shadow one week, Suspense the next week, Inner Sanctum the next week, Jack Benny, whatever the case may be. Just go to freeradioclassics.com, sign up. Absolutely free. It's our way of thanking you for listening to this show. So any plays, musicals coming your way? You got anything this week that you're going to go see in Broadway,
you know,
Lisa?
Besides the show that we talked about, the Tony Bennett Salute, which is at the Mercury Theater, I saw another show this week at Northlight Theater called Faceless.
Faceless.
Faceless. Yes, uh-huh. Northlight Theater is in Skokie. It's across the street from Old Orchard.
I know exactly where it is.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, have you ever been to that theater before?
I drove
before?
Past it before.
You've driven right by it before.
Right by.
It was a great show.
Was it?
Yeah.
Faceless?
Yeah.
And anything coming your way in the next...
Well, there's always things coming my way. There's a show opening at Steppenwolf this next weekend.
Mm.
I don't have the that information
Broadway,
in front of me.
Broadway, Lisa.
Well, I can't remember. You know, there's so much all the time. Uncle Vanya's opening at Goodman Theater. I'm going to be seeing that soon. Robert Falls is directing that. So,
oh, yeah. One of the best directors.
It's probably going to be a winner.
Very cool.
There's a lot of good stuff coming up and... Yeah. You know, I should post about it. I can, you know, just kind of list the shows that
I'm going
to see.
Post it. I want to know
when
all about
that. When
you
go onto Facebook, you can check that out.
Yeah, we have a Facebook page. And you know what? We need to break that 2,000 mark. Can we try to do that tonight, folks? We're at 19-something.
I'll tell you exactly
Would you
where
please
we are
do us
at.
A favor, everyone? If you haven't liked us yet on our Facebook page, please search WGN Radio Theater and go to Facebook and hit like, because we're at 19-something.
We are at 1882.
Oh, no,
that's followers.
Right.
Sorry, no. 1933.
All right, so we only need 67 more.
67 more to get to 2,000.
So
that'd be a landmark.
We could do that tonight.
We could.
We?
I think so.
Folks, help us out. Let's get the 2,000 mark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good
stuff
on here.
If we can get to 2,000.
We just changed our cover photo tonight. We put a new picture up that we just took tonight, me and my little green sweatshirt. So we've got Mike and Carl and Elif and me, and we've got a picture of all of us, because actually somebody noted on Facebook that she didn't really like our cover photo. She said it looked like
our
heads were cut off and it was a little bit blurry. So I thought, okay, tonight's the night.
Remember, Elif, earlier I said, what's Lisa's favorite thing to say? Hey, everyone, let's take a picture. So she's talking about taking pictures again over here.
Yeah, but I took it of the whole team so that we could post it for our Facebook
cover. And I'm glad, because I didn't like that picture either, really.
You didn't tell me.
No, half my head, your head, half our heads were cut off.
If you click on it, it wasn't cut off. But
for
just
me,
the
it's
way
good
it,
that half the head was
just
cut
the
off.
Way it was up there, it looked like
it was.
Well,
we got Cutie Patootie Elif, and her head was cut off.
Yeah.
You don't want to cut her head off.
No, we don't like to cut off heads.
No. All right, it's 1:37 in the morning. It's time for the conclusion of Murder at Midnight.
And now, back to Murder at Midnight and The Creeper. Back to Georgia Grant, hurrying hysterically through the dark streets towards the apartment with the broken lock on the door.
Good evening, ma'am. Oh. Out late, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, you're the new doorman?
Just relieving Charlie. Nice night.
Yeah, it was very nice.
Here, let me ring the elevator for you.
No, you don't have to trouble.
No trouble, ma'am. There. Apartment 4D, huh?
Yeah. How did you know?
Doesn't take long.
When will this elevator come?
Coming now. Terrible things, ma'am. The happenings.
What?
The creeper. It's sort of...
Going up?
Yeah.
Up and down, up and down. The ups and downs of life, that's me. I'm a living milkshake, Mrs. Grant. Uh-oh.
What's wrong, Jimmy?
Stuck. Imagine getting stuck between the third and fourth with a production like you.
Get going, Sonny. You want me to report you?
Okay, okay. Can't you take a joke? Maybe I misconstrued that smile you always give me. Maybe you shouldn't ought to smile that way. Fourth floor.
Let me out.
If I drop in later, will you be more receptive?
Oh, home. Oh, thank goodness. I must be going out of my mind. Key. Where's my key? Darn this lock. Darn the lock. Hello. Is the locksmith in yet? Well, I want to know how soon I can get my lock changed. Yes, I know it's late, but he promised. This is Mrs. Grant. Yes, 4D, yes. I know you just explained to me, but
hello,
I must...
Georgia?
Yes? Yes, so won't you...
I've been waiting for you.
Don't, you little fool. It's me. Do you want the whole house to... That's better.
What are you doing here?
Oh, don't worry. You haven't got a thing to worry about now. I've come to protect you. Give me the phone. Hello? Never mind about the lock, thank you. Sit down. Make yourself at home. Been waiting here for you. Long time no see, Georgia.
What do you want, Pearlie?
Me? A headline. Your husband wants, too. He wants I should keep an eye on you.
What's that?
Sure. You didn't think Steve and I were acquainted, did you? Oh, yes. From way back. Just met him at a bar.
I don't believe you. What do you mean, keep an eye on me?
Oh, just in case the creep... You heard of the character?
You're mad. You've always been mad, Pearly Chase. Where is Steve? Why should he send you here? Why should he think the creeper will come here? What are you doing here?
Told you. Playing along crazy. Got a drink?
You're drunk now. And you're getting right out of here. You're nothing but a no-good rummy.
And you're nothing but a no-good... You finish it. When I took the drink, it was to drown you out, and you know it. I'm still a rum pot, Angel, which means I haven't got rid of you yet.
Get out!
You're a little two-timing redhead. You're all the same, you redheads. Even a wedding ring can't change you.
Oh,
don't play the innocent. My business is snooping. I make a living at it, between drinks. So your new motto's love thy neighbor, huh? Mr. Stone across the hall? Poor dumb Steve.
I'm warning you, get out or I'll call the police.
Stay where you are.
Pearlie, what are you doing with that gun?
I wouldn't pick up that phone if I were you. You see, there's a big reward for the creeper and a heck of an exclusive, and I don't want to share it. I'm riding a hunch. Now sit down, darling. Just play along with me while I play along crazy. Sit down. That's it. Like we're expecting company. Let's have some music. Don't just sit. Let's have some music. I said turn on the radio. That's it. That's a good girl. Dance music. Let's dance. Give me your arm, let's dance. Like old times. Round and around like my brain. Why are you trembling? I still love you, you little fool. Ask me why. I love you. I love you, you lovely redhead. I could kill you and you deserve it. With the radio on, you could scream and no one would hear. I could put my hand on your throat like this and I could strangle you. Why are you crying? Stop it. I'm here to protect you. Stop crying. Cut it, I said. Cut it out. I can't stand it. I never could. Okay. You want me to leave? All right, I will.
It's your funeral. What am I saving you for anyway? Where's my hat? In a few minutes, there'll be a knock or a ring or the door will just open. You'll be lying in a pool of blood like the other three. Goodbye, my worthless. Give my regards to the creeper.
What if he comes back? He wants to kill me. He wants to kill me. Somebody wants to kill me. I must lie down. My head is splitting. Trying to frighten me. Jealous spite, that's it. Like the other three. In a pool of blood. Like the other three, like the other three. Almost 12 o'clock. Any minute now there'll be a knock. Or a ring. Yes?
This is the doorman, Mrs. Grant.
Yes?
The druggist is here with the medicine. Shall I let him up?
A medicine? Yes, let it... No. Don't let that man up.
Want me to bring it up?
No. I'm perfectly all right. I don't need it, you hear? Don't you dare come up. Don't anyone. Oh, please, I must have it changed right away. My door lock. Yes, this is Mrs. Grant. Yes, I do want it. Of course, anyone can get in, anyone. They want to murder me, but I don't know who. It's the creeper. Oh, you'll come right away? Thank you. Thank you so much, but hurry. Please hurry or I'll go out of my mind. Oh, thank the Lord. Like the other three in a pool of blood. Any minute now, a knock or a ring. Who's there?
It's me, dear, Mrs. Stone.
Oh, what do you want?
I've been worried about you. Are you ill?
No, I'm all right, Mrs. Stone. I'm feeling fine.
Open up, dear. Don't you want me to keep you company?
No, thank you. I was just... Oh, stop that.
Do let me in, silly, and we'll...
No, please, go away. I'm going to sleep. Go away. You hear me? Go away. Hello.
Hello, Georgia. You all right?
Oh, Steve. Steve, I've been frantic. So good to hear your voice. Where are you?
At headquarters. I'm coming right home. Sweetheart, is anything wrong? You said
No, not now. Not when I hear you, Steve. I don't know what came over me all day. I've been imagining things. So silly. My nerves.
I'm sorry about supper tonight, honey. I wasn't myself. My job had me down, but now everything's okay.
Oh, of course. Forgive me, Steve. I've been bad, wicked. Oh, darling, if you knew what I've gone through tonight, the most dreadful state. And then that... Steve, did you send someone here today?
Pearly Chase?
Then you did?
Yeah, to keep you company. Isn't he still with you?
No, I just got rid of him.
Oh, I wish you hadn't. He's an all right guy. Smart reporter. Lives in the neighborhood, too. Honey, it sounds cockeyed. I mean, Pearlie's theory, but I was kind of worried when I got to thinking, so... Listen, Georgia.
Yes?
Don't let anyone in the house till I get home.
No, I won't, Steve.
Not anyone, do you hear? Not anyone.
Oh, Steve, wait.
What?
Oh, wait, Steve, it's... thank goodness at last now I can breathe easy. Darling, just a minute.
Georgia. Hello. Hello, Georgia.
Mr. Frank?
Mr. Frank.
Thank goodness you've come. Please, step in. It's the lock on this door I want. Just a moment, my husband's on the phone.
Can you hear me, Georgia?
Steve?
Yeah, what happened? There was something else I wanted to tell you.
It's all right, darling. Everything's all right now, Steve. You needn't worry.
Didn't I just hear you talking to someone? Was that somebody at the door?
No, it's no one, dear. It's just Mr. Frank, the locksmith. Put a load.
Georgia, listen, Georgia. That's what I was going to tell you.
What is?
The police are on a new trail. They think maybe a locksmith. Georgia, you listening? They think maybe the creeper's a locksmith.
Oh.
Get him out, quick.
What nice lipstick you Georgia, use, can you hear Mrs. Grant. Yes. Georgia. Very nice lipstick.
Georgia.
Very nice.
Can you hear me, Georgia? Georgia. Hello, Georgia.
Hello?
Hello, who's this?
Hurry. Catch me before I kill more. For heaven's sake.
Soft footsteps hurrying down the corridor, away from the door with the broken lock, now standing ajar, body of a red-headed woman. And still, should she not have known that her only visitor would be death when the clocks struck 12 for
murder at midnight?
Remember to be with us again when death knocks at the door, wearing a familiar face, and the clocks strike 12 for
murder at midnight.
The part of Georgia was played by Ann Shepherd. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder.
That's Murder at Midnight from May 16th, 1947, with The Creeper, starring Ann Shepherd. You know, when I was looking for a picture to post of Ann Shepherd, I couldn't find one. But I did find a very cool sort of a promo piece that was in the newspaper for Murder at Midnight that aired right here on WGN back in the 1940s.
Yeah, I saw
that. I posted that.
Yeah,
it's
on our Facebook page right now if you want to check it out.
Yeah. And when you do go to our Facebook page, please like us. We want to get past...
We got a few more.
We want to get past 2,000, though, tonight.
We're really close.
We only have 10 more minutes to do that.
All right. We are so close.
We're on a countdown. Come on. Go to Facebook.
All right.
And like us at Facebook.
You want to know? We
just
have...
search.
Oh, 1943.
Well, we got a few, right? Because we were at 33.
Yeah.
So we got 10.
Yeah.
We need more, though, folks. Come on.
All right.
Go to Facebook and search WGN Radio Theater. And please like us. Let's get past 2,000. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. You know, this mighty radio station, Lisa, has been around since the 1920s. And it always has had entertainment and talk. It's just like the king of talk
radio.
Well,
you
radio,
know, Nick DeGilla is here. I think he's been here since the 1920s.
Yeah,
is that right, Nick?
I think he has been.
Your hair's getting long.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm letting my hair grow out.
Are you?
Yeah. It's been a while since I used to have really...
You're trying to get it long like Carl.
Like down to here.
Are you going
to
star in a Western or something?
Is no, that I'm just lazy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Cheap.
Yeah. You know, they have bowls that you can just put right on your head and you just chop all around.
Again,
the bowl.
Lazy.
Not bowl.
Yeah, lazy. Okay,
bowl.
Yeah. What is it?
You said bowls.
I said a bowl.
Like bowl.
B-O-W-L.
Bowl.
Bowl. Like bowl.
Bowl.
Put a
Durham.
Bowl that you eat
like
your
bowl.
Cereal out of.
Like bowl.
So, Nick, how are you, man?
I'm okay. I've not been here since 1920
something.
No, 1985.
Actually,
almost
1985.
Though.
It's been 32. May will be 32 years.
You're the longest on the air here, right?
Orion.
Oh, well, Orion. Yeah, that's true. Orion.
It's
right.
Orion and then me.
Yeah. Wow.
It's terrifying. I know.
That's yeah.
No, May of 1985 was my first
terrifying.
My first official appearance on Roy Leonard Show.
What date?
I think it was the last. We always, I don't know the exact date, but we always celebrate it as the last Saturday, whatever the last Saturday in May was in 1985.
Wow, 1985.
Yeah.
You think about this for a second. 85. I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was in college. So we're like the same age, right? You were in college when you started here?
Well, I had dropped out of college, but I was
okay.
At the age where I should have been in college.
Okay, so you were like 20.
I was 19.
Wow.
Because my birthday's in July.
Started on WGN Radio at 19.
Yeah.
And what was your time slot?
Well, I was on with Roy.
Okay, you're on with Roy.
Right.
You were just like what? Like a sidekick with him
or
what?
Well, it started out originally Roy wanted me to produce his show. He wanted me to interview for a producer of the show, and I didn't get it. So he said, you know what? As a consolation, I'll just give you a spot on my show.
Really?
Yeah.
So maybe it's
and
good
he
you didn't
said,
get it.
No, it's really good that yeah. I didn't get it. And he said, look, I'm tired of ninja movies. I'm tired of horror movies. I don't want to see this crap anymore. You basically review the crap movies for me. And that's how it started. It started with me reviewing the horror movies and the terrible movies that Roy didn't want to see anymore. And then it evolved into our partnership. And then I ended up guesting on everybody else's shows. So Steve and Johnny, I would do 2 monthly visits with Steve and Johnny. And that's how it started.
And what about Eddie? Were you on his show much?
I was on Eddie's show a few times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my beginnings here at WGN was on Eddie. Because I used to be on his show 3-4 times a year. We would do classic radio. We'd always do it at Halloween time, mm-hmm. you know. And then we'd do some at Christmas time and things. And he was the one always invited me. Now, this is when it was Addison Street.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You know, yeah, Bradley Place.
In Bradley Place. Yeah. Yeah, and great studios over there, beautiful studios.
Yeah.
And I used to go there and be on all night with him. And then, it evolved into...
Yeah, my first actual show, they teamed me up with a guy named Gary Lee Wright. This was Mary June Rose, was PD at the time.
Oh, I remember Mary June Rose, yeah. Sure.
And she's like, I don't know if I should do this, but I'm going to give you a shot on an actual show to have your own.
Nice.
So we started doing overnights in 1998. And then I got my own show after Roy retired. I ended up weekends, overnights, and I did that until almost 4 years ago.
Wow, that's great. Well, that's been 30-something years.
32
here.
Years. It'll be in
wow,
May. 32 years, yeah.
So what's on the show this morning?
Movie reviews. We're going to review all the new movies. we're going to talk about the Super Bowl commercials. Here's something that I did that was real smart last night. I went to bed at the beginning of the third quarter, when it was 28-3.
Oh, my gosh. You're kidding me.
No.
I started watching it at that time.
Yeah.
I was like, I got to get a couple. I'm going to try and get a couple hours of sleep. Sundays are weird for me because I got to get back into the groove.
Sure, sure.
Of my sleeping schedule. So I'm like, this game's over.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd watched almost all the commercials online already, and we're going to talk about the commercials. Yeah. So I go to bed. I wake up. I look at my news feed. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. It was like
right.
the biggest comeback in the history of sports, and I'm sleeping.